call to order the House of the House Committee on Education for April 10th, 2017. And with this, what we're going to do is open up a work session on House Bill 3267. Lisa, if you could go through and read this, please.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3267 allows school districts or public charter schools to waive requirements that are not set by the State Board of Education for children in foster care who are homeless or runaway. It's effective toward high school diplomas that are awarded after the act becomes law. There is a dash one amendment which defines foster child, homeless, or runaway, which is defined by the State Board of Education, and it clarifies that requirements can be waived for children in grades 9 through 12 and allows the school district to accept credits toward requirements set by rule by the State Board of Education if the credits satisfied the school district or charter school. The last hearing date was April 5th. The dash one amendment does have a revenue statement as no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement which has been issued as no impact.
Okay. This was Representative Vile and Representative Bynum's bill. Okay. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
I'll make the motion, Chair.
Excuse me.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the dash one amendment.
Okay. Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the dash one amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. If not, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3267 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3267 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, now Matt, will you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Representative Vile and Representative Bynum, if they could carry the bill.
Be great. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Very good. Okay, with that, we close the work set, work session on House Bill 3267, and I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3156. You could read.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3156 requires the Oregon Department of Education to be responsible for providing students education for the first 30 calendar days after an eligible day treatment program or eligible residential day treatment program becomes or expands operation to a different school district. It requires the Department of Education to pay the school district for any cost incurred by the treatment program imposed on the school district and establishes when ODE is required to pay the school district for cost incurred by the treatment program, including the cost incurred were during the first year of establishment. There is a revenue statement which has been issued as no, a revenue impact statement has been issued, and there is a fiscal impact statement issued as well.
Okay.
Yes, it goes to Ways and Means.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3156 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3156 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Representative McLean? Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Yes. Yeah.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent to, as amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3156. And open up we have everyone here for the next one? A public hearing on House Bill 3413.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3413 requires that public charter schools receive written permission of the school district or district school board in which the school of a facility will be located. It requires the permission is obtained prior to the first day of classes for which students receive instructors. There's no fiscal or revenue impact issued on that version of the bill. There is a dash one amendment which requires the changes to public charter schools obtain written permission apply to schools or other facilities that are modified after the effective date of the act, and it goes into effect July 1st, 2017. And there's no fiscal revenue issued on that. There is a dash two amendment which removes the requirement that the school board have written permission for the purposes of leasing, purchasing, constructing, improving, or repairing a school that requires the school take action to grant permission to the board. It allows virtual public charter schools to lease or otherwise use facilities in school districts if providing written notice to the sponsor of the virtual charter school and the district school board. It requires written notice prior to the first day on which students will use the testing facility. It goes into effect July 1st, 2017. There is a revenue statement issued as no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement issued as no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Trump at the bit.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the people we have for this, and then also I have a statement that I'll start out with this, is why don't we bring up, we have Richard Donovan and Kristen Mikes. Actually, I was going to, instead of going down there from the dais, I will read my statement from up here.
Okay.
So we'll start with you in a moment. But for the record, I am Margaret Doherty, State Representative from Tigard in Southwest Portland, and I want to take a quick moment to provide a quick explanation of the Dash 3 amendment before you. Hopefully I've got the right. Oh, never mind. I'm not going to speak on this one. That's a different bill. So please. Testify.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Richard Donovan on behalf of OSBA. Thank you for taking time today to hear House Bill 3413. And thank you, Madam Chair, for introducing the bill. House Bill 3413 would require charter schools to receive permission from a district that they're going to operate in. This is mostly aimed at a district outside of the district in which the school is chartered. Let's step back into the Wayback Machine in 1999 when charter schools were authorized. The section of ORS that created them did not contain the prohibition or requirement that every other public school abides under, which is that you have to get permission if you're going to operate outside your district. So hypothetical, if Jervis School District wanted to open a school in Salem-Keizer, they would have to get permission from Salem-Keizer to do so. This does not apply to charter schools. For a number of years, until 2015, the law was silent on this topic. And it was unclear what happened. And this, a precursor to this bill, House Bill 3044 in 2015, was introduced that would have required permission as well. This committee amended that bill to require notice. And it passed into law, it was signed by the governor. I think the thought at the time I was the staff person of the committee, and as I remember it, the thought at the time was that notice to the district was better than not knowing, that a district would benefit from knowing that a charter school is operating within their boundaries. That, what we at OSBA have observed is that bill has put charter schools on notice that they can just open up a school anywhere they want, and that's not what we think is best practice. And we're not worried about schools that are good actors, that are good participants in their community. The example that I give are the Arthur Academy schools. They're in multiple districts. They charter with every district. They have an overreaching organization that supports what they do. They're great participants. It's other schools that we're worried about that maybe aren't as knowledgeable or experienced or don't have as strong guidelines that think, oh, I would like to be in another place, let me just open a school. And we're worried about bad outcomes in that environment. The OSBA is also launching kind of a new line of business or line of support for charter schools. And we think that this kind of guidance, that this requirement to have schools participate with the district school board where the school is located, is really in line with best practice and good management. I will also, I want to put on the record their dash twos. This bill, and when I request this bill be drafted, this bill is really for me focused on kind of what we colloquially call bricks and mortar charter schools. I'm not concerned with virtual online charter schools. They're valuable participants in school districts, especially in kind of the more rural parts of the state. Districts rely on them. And so there's some language in the dash twos that exempt out testing facilities. I've spoken with some of my colleagues that represent those communities. We're happy to change that language. It might be that we do this on the Senate side to make sure that it's where it should be. But generally, I want to make sure, and the goal of this bill is to make sure that charter schools, bricks and mortar charter schools, work with the district where they're going to be working, because it is those district kids that the school district has responsibility for. And I will leave it now to my colleague, Kristen Miles, who is actually the expert on all these things. Thank you very much.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, on behalf of OSBA members, including 197 school districts throughout Oregon, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3413. I'm Kristen Miles, and I'm a board development specialist at OSBA. And having nearly a decade of experience in the charter school system, I'm happy to speak to you about this bill and the reason OSBA supports this bill. ORS 332158 requires a school district wanting to lease, purchase, or construct a school in another district to obtain written permission from the new district in which it intends to locate prior to the day before students will attend classes in that new school. And currently, as you've heard, there's no such requirement for charter schools. In fact, a charter school is only required to provide notice to its sponsor and to the district in which it plans to locate a new school facility. This means that in the current system, as Richard said, a charter school sponsored by a school district could open additional schools all over the state in districts that have not approved them through an application process, do not sponsor them, and have no oversight over the education being provided to students in their districts. In effect, the current law makes the application process obsolete for charter schools wanting to multiply once they have received a single approval from a single district. House Bill 3413 would simply impose the same requirement on charter schools that is currently imposed on districts. Charter schools intending to open an additional school in a district which is not their sponsor would need to get permission from that new district. This preserves local control for the district in which the charter school wants to locate. And while this bill is a step in the right direction, we do believe that there is more work that needs to be done. Not addressed in this bill is a requirement that a charter school get permission from its sponsoring district before opening a school in another district under the same sponsorship. And why is this important? So let's say, for example, that a charter school located in Salem wanted to open up another school in Nissa. The school gets permission from Nissa and merely notifies Salem. But Salem would still be the sponsor of this charter school. This means that Salem would still have the obligation to provide special education services, to conduct the annual site visit, and to provide ongoing oversight of the school's academic, financial, and organizational performance, and to hold the school accountable. How would Salem effectively do this from a distance of 400 miles? There's no guidance for this and no support for the sponsoring district. Again, we believe that this bill is a good step in the right direction in ensuring that charter schools maintain positive relationships with the districts in which they're located, as well as preserving local control for districts. And we're happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of this panel? Representative McLean.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I heard correctly. So online virtual charter school testing centers are not part of this bill.
Madam Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, the dash two specifically amend out testing centers. I have spoken with some of my colleagues. There may be some wordsmithing around that, but generally speaking, they're not part of this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have an example that's caused this to rise to the level that we're trying to solve it here? Or are these things that might happen?
Representative Doherty, Representative Springer, we have one example that I'm aware of, which is a charter school that's chartered out of Lowell that represented on an application to OD that they want to do some of their federal, some of our Oregon charter schools funding grants to open up a school in Bend. The Bend School District is not aware. They had not provided notice. I don't know if they've actually taken steps to do it, but they did put it on an official application to ODE for federal money. And it has only been 18 months since this bill came into effect. So, you know, that's kind of the first of what we're concerned about. Could be more.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Kristen, you were talking about if there was a Salem school, there was a charter school in Salem, chartered with the Salem School District. They could just put a school in Nissa. I don't know why they do that. Extreme example, but just put one in Nissa. Can you just open up another school without addressing that in the charter with the sponsoring district?
Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, you are, is the question, could you address that ahead of time in the contract, or could you just go ahead and do it if it's not addressed in your current contract?
So it's my understanding, formerly sitting on a school board that had a charter with a charter school in the district. The charter was written, it wasn't addressed, you can't have another building or you can't move or you can't do those. Those things were not specifically called out. But the charter, based on my recollection, was written in a way that there just wouldn't have been another school pop up. There wouldn't have been room within the cap. Several things, and if you are required to provide special ed services, you better not move 8 hours away. So I don't know how that scenario could occur.
Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, so the district that sponsors the charter school would be provided or would be required to provide those special ed services. So there are not caps in every charter school contract. Some districts have them, some don't. Some schools within districts have them, others don't. And we're certainly not asking to require those. There may be some limiting factors in any individual contract that would maybe impact any individual charter school's opportunity to do that, but by and large, there are no requirements that would be in any contract that would necessarily prevent that from happening or ensure that a district and its sponsor were agreed upon this or that the new district would be agreeable to this as well. So in that case, if a school, you know, in my extreme example of just to illustrate distance, in Salem wanted to locate in Nissa, they would just simply notify their sponsoring district, Salem, that they were going to do that, irrespective of whether they got, if they got permission from Nissa. Again, this is why this is important to us. The district would still be, the school district that sponsored them, Salem would still be responsible for providing all of those services and maintaining oversight and doing the site visit. And that's why we say this is a step in the right direction, but this bill also doesn't ask for permission from the sponsoring district.
So we're talking about hypotheticals still, right? Hypothetical situations, not actual cases.
Except for the example that Richard mentioned. And I don't know of others.
Representative Doherty, Representative Springer, we have that one example thus far. And no, I just want to reiterate that we're talking about, we're concerned about schools that are not necessarily, maybe not willfully acting poorly, but just making decisions that are have ramifications that they don't anticipate that could really negatively impact kids.
Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So you came to me and brought this to my office, and one of the conversations we had was my concern that charter school operates a little differently than a traditional brick-and-mortar school because, of course, they don't get the bond for buildings. Their availability of buildings in a district might be limited, so going into the neighboring district, and I had to look up on a map where Lowell, Oregon is, but, you know, to go into somewhere in a neighboring district, you know, that is sort of the reason and the flexibility for charter. So the question I have is, if a school district under this bill, when you have to go, if it were law, and ask permission, and the school district just said no, what's the opportunity or the option for the charter school? Is there another alternative pathway for them to seek resolution to that? Because I don't see that in this bill, and I don't see it in the amendment.
Representative Doherty, Representative Parrish, it's not included in the bill or in the amendment. We'd be happy to discuss that.
What are you going
to
say?
The application process.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. There is the application process in the local district they can go through. That is a valid concern. I'm looking forward to maybe hopefully having your support in this measure, Representative. I'm not sure how you feel about it. But these are the kind of concerns that also the other way goes for districts too. The districts are responsible for managing their real estate, they're responsible for buildings, they're responsible for the kids in their district, and there is always going to have to be that discussion. And that's what we think this bill does, is it enables them to have a talk.
So what I'm hearing you say is that right now the bill is written, says that if a school charter goes into a district that is not theirs, the district has just can say no, and it stops the process for that school district, that charter school, sorry, to be able to go into a different boundary if they can't otherwise find property or land or whatever, and they certainly have no bonding dollars, they don't get full funding, so there may be the, property. I live in a community, it's very expensive to house anything, right? So I'm in the urban growth boundary, and it's expensive to buy land in West Lynn. So they might actually have to go down into Wilsonville or Aurora or whatever to run a charter school because the land's cheaper, the building's cheaper. This bill takes away the opportunity then for the deliver those services, because you're saying that there's not an actual mechanism for the charter school to get permission if the district says no.
Chair Doherty and Representative Parrish, the mechanism in the law for a charter school to be in any district is the application process. Mm-hmm. So aside from the fact that,
I get that.
Once a charter school is sponsored by a current by a district, this would prevent charter schools from just having one approval and one sponsorship and proliferating throughout the state. Whereas if they wanted to go ahead and the Arthur schools were an example that Richard gave, I'm very familiar with them, and they have six charter schools in the Portland metro area, and they have approvals from all of those districts. So the initial intent of the charter school law was that you be approved by the district in which you're located. So that would be their other recourse, is to go through the application process in the district in which they wish to locate.
I guess we're talking, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I guess we're talking around each other, because if the Westland School District has Three Rivers Charter, right, and they just built a new building, but if the cheapest place for them to build that building was to go across the river 2 minutes into Oregon City, and they found a lot and they found a place to build, this bill wouldn't let them go there if Oregon City just said no. There would be no recourse under this bill for them. There's not even an alternative method for them to go back up and have that evaluated. It would just be an arbitrary no, says Oregon City School District. Can this charter school be cited? That's the problem I have with the bill as it's written.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Next we have is Daniel Hold, David Aguirre, and Marshall Coben. Okay, we get going. We've got lots to do today. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dr. Holt, I'm the director of Baker Charter Schools. We are a virtual school, which is addressed in the Dash 2s. But just wanted to provide a little bit of perspective to the committee. Since the bill was passed in, I think it was 2014, 2015, we have opened up 5 testing centers across Oregon to support our students who are enrolled in our school. And we found that these centers, at least for a virtual charter school, are key to the success of supporting our kids that are already engaged in our online classes, and they're able to come to the centers for tutoring and state testing. And at this point, we're still not holding classes at these facilities. I realize it's addressed in the Dash 2 amendments, which I appreciate, but I can also appreciate some of the conversation around the brick-and-mortar charter schools and options for them. And if we do go back to the original intent of a charter school, charter schools generally come up with some niche level of education, some specialized service. So I run a virtual school. Arthur Academy has their model. And if the student can access that model from a different facility in a different location, I think that goes back to some of the original intent of a charter school, is to have a specialized function within the overall education field. So I'm always for options and availabilities. I appreciate the Dash 2s. I can appreciate the concern and might suggest a possible way that if a district does say no, what's an alternative pathway that they could pursue for a brick-and-mortar charter school. For me, I have certainly enjoyed the ability to open these centers. And if there wasn't a Dash 2, I would have great concern because I have 5-year leases, I have vendors and all kinds of things that depend on me staying in these locations that I've secured. So That's my perspective from running a virtual school. I think that having a physical location for a virtual school is helpful.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the Oregon Virtual Academy and Insight Schools of Oregon Painted Hills. Both of our schools are innovative educational options for our students K through 12, and continue to innovate based on best practices learned from our other schools that we work with throughout the country. I appreciate the outreach from the proponents of the bill and the Dash 2 and the Dash 2 amendments that specifically break out a section on virtual schools, and that we would be able to work with them either here on this side, in this committee, or on the Senate side to fine-tune some of the issues that we've identified in the original bill and in the Dash 2s. As an innovator in the educational profession, we need to think long-term, and in this case, that is beyond the inclusion of the words testing facilities only. In the Dash 2 amendments, it talks to testing facilities. We are concerned that could have a negative impact on virtual schools, our ability to offer blended learning, which is a fast-growing area of virtual learning, site-based face-to-face support, where we would, if we were, say, we've got about 2,500 students K-12 today, just what if we got 2,000 more students in a particular part of the state and we're interested in going up and giving them more face-to-face, this would be potentially a problem if it was only a testing facility. Additionally, we have the Oregon Insight Painted Hills, which is in the Mitchell School District, but the school office is located in Prineville, which is within the Cook County School District. And I think it gets to what Representative Parrish is talking about, is the availability of some storefront to put in the administrative offices. So we would be just questions about situations that would arise in that sort of a situation. We think that in line 5 of the Dash 2 amendments on page 2, we would suggest the addition after testing the words or educational facilities, and this would get to our concern expressed above. So thank you for the opportunity to come in.
Thank you very much.
Next. Chair Doherty, committee members, I would, like my colleagues, appreciate the amendment that we heard about earlier. I always get concerned when we put obstacles in front of the ability for kids to have options. I know when we became educators.
Say your name.
I'm sorry, my name is David Gray. I'm the executive director of Metro East Web Academy. So anyway, we became educators because we care about kids, and sometimes we make decisions concerning schools that are about adult convenience and not about what's best for kids. So anytime we put an obstacle in place of kids having options for their education, I always get concerned. Like my colleagues, we believe that the blended learning environment in virtual schools is probably the best approach. And so if there are potential roadblocks from us putting in a facility where our kids can get that additional support, I have concerns about that. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Evans.
It's a question and a comment. But thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Here's the deal. Just so I understand, the option twos aren't good enough yet. Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying.
The Dash 2s are not good enough yet.
Well, from what I understand, I have not read it. This was from the last time that I read the bill, it wasn't there. So my understanding is about testing centers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Here's my concern. I happen to believe part of the reason that children right now are where we're at is because there aren't enough obstacles, and in fact, there are too many options. And the educational industrial complex has forgotten the value of a small class size with a teacher and a kid. So to me, I actually saw the Dash 2s as an attempt to try and be as flexible as possible. So I am disappointed that the Dash 2s are not sufficient. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much. Those are the only ones we had signed up for House Bill 3413. Anyone else want to speak on this bill? Okay. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 34. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3413. And I open up a public hearing on House Bill 2898. Alethea?
Yeah, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2898 requires the Oregon Department of Education to develop by rule a method for analyzing progress toward high school graduation, which includes credit deficiency and dropout rate for any student for the student population of ODE calculator graduation rate. Defines credit deficient to mean having accumulated less than the number of credits necessary if at any point to graduate high school within 4 years after enrolling. The reporting requirements are effective for the 2018-2019 academic year. There is a revenue statement issued as no revenue impact. At this point, no fiscal impact statement has been issued.
Okay, fine. Okay, the first panel we have is Marshall Koba and Ira Chavez. Or Marshall Koba.
I think I was supposed to text her and I left my phone back there, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, here in support of House Bill 2898. This bill had a public hearing about three weeks ago, and just back to refresh your memory on some of the concepts in the bill. The Oregon Virtual Academy is a virtual public charter school with an independent board of directors, about 2,450 students in K through 12. Our charter is with the North Bend School District. Improving Oregon's graduation rate is a clear and urgent priority for our state. We know that there are many efforts underway, including those led by Chief Innovation Officer Colt Gill, Dr. Knorr, and his team at ODE, and we believe House Bill 2898 is complementary and aligned with these efforts. House Bill 2898 is a rather benign bill that will assist the state in assessing student progress towards graduation and an important effort in collecting more and better data. And everyone that I've spoken to in the building at the department suggests that more and better data it would be helpful as we try to better understand the background and what's actually behind graduation rates. The bill simply will allow the department by rule to develop a method for analyzing the progress towards graduation for any student population which they currently collect a graduation rate to determine the percentage of students who are credit deficient, the degree of credit deficiency after each academic year, the change year over year in degree of credit deficiency among credit deficient students, the dropout rate among credit deficient students, and the change year over year in the dropout rate among credit deficient students. Currently, Oregon tracks whether or not ninth grade students finish their first year of high school on track to graduate, as this has been determined to be a promising indicator of the future likelihood of success or dropping out. However, this data collection is limited to just the ninth grade, and we're aware of no other annual ID of students that is congregated as, at the state level who are off track to graduate in other grade levels. So House Bill 2898 is about developing a method to analyze progress toward graduation that includes credit deficiency with ODE in the lead as far as how to do it. For the Oregon Virtual Academy, the ability to analyze progress towards graduation that includes credit deficiency is critical information, as many of our students enroll behind in their credits and are unlikely to graduate on time. This data would be helpful to us, but it would also be helpful to every other school in Oregon. We understand ODE does not currently collect this data, but we believe it is feasible, desirable, and a positive step for all students. And we thank you for this hearing and urge your support for House Bill 2898.
Okay, thank you. Iris?
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the House Education Committee. My name is Iris Maria Chavez, and I work with a coalition of Oregon's community-based charter schools. We're here today to speak in support of House Bill 2898. This is a bill, as Marshall has mentioned, will allow the Oregon Department of Education to collect and create a method for analyzing progress toward graduation for students who are credit deficient. The charter school high schools that I work with are in support of this effort because they would like to see how best to help students progress to graduation. And as schools that often receive students who are on their second, third, and sometimes fourth try to reaching graduation, having that kind of information and the type of statistical analysis that the Oregon Department of Education can provide would be incredibly helpful. And I would like to mention that this is not an issue that is limited to charter schools. High schools across the state would benefit from the same type of statistical analysis that the Department of Education can provide. We have many district-run high schools that are receiving students who are credit deficient, and being able to put in place the right kinds of programs and services for them is of the utmost benefit to all of them. So we would urge your support for House Bill 2898.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panel? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The second panel is Daniel Hold and Daniel Gray.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dr. Hold again, Director Baker Charter Schools. And I will say that we are in full support of this bill. I think there's an untold story in Oregon's graduation rate, and it links directly to credit deficient students. And although I'm representing a virtual school, I believe that this is a problem that's throughout the entire Oregon education system. And coming up with problems or analyzing the problem of credit deficient students and finding solutions that work for all, I think, is critical to raising our graduation rate. So we're very much in support of this bill. We think that it will reveal some important information for the Department of Education moving forward, and we're excited to see this as a possibility. So I think this is a great change, and I would urge the support from the committee.
Okay, thank you. Sir?
Chair Doherty, committee members, my name is David Gray. I'm the executive director of Metro East Web Academy. I remembered this then. I, too, am in support of this bill. As Representative McClayton knows, is working with us this past year. The majority of our students are 11th and 12th graders, and most of those students come to us credit deficient. And we're currently measured on a four-year graduation rate, where many of these kids are not even in the ballpark of getting that to graduation in 4 years. Many of our students are fifth and sixth year graduates. So we would support anything that would help us analyze and study why kids come to us credit deficient and how we can help these kids be successful. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay, if not, thank you very much. Okay, the last one is Morgan Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA. And sometimes bills get heard and then they come back, and you look at them the first time and talk about them. It seems like a good idea, certainly the policy of goal of trying to analyze how our students are doing towards graduation is a laudable one, and certainly we support that. But as we look at the bill further, I want to just highlight three major concerns we have about the bill as drafted. And I'd also like to note that I have reached out to the sponsors and offered to make an amendment that if the charter schools want to do this, we certainly don't want to get in the way of that policy. But let me just talk about the three issues. The first one was, we talk in this committee a lot about data collection. And by my count, this bill would require at least 168 new data cells that districts and OD would have to collect and report on. And how you get to that is, if you read the bill, it says that the work in the bill described has to be done for every subgroup that the department calculates a graduation rate. There are 14 disaggregated subgroups that the department calculates graduation rates for. There are four requirements in the bill. And then it's year over year, so 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12. So that's 14 subgroups times four pieces of data times 3 years you have to do it. That's 168 new data collections a year. So we have some pretty big concerns about all that new data when it's unclear what it would be used for, what the purpose of all that data collection would be. The second thing the bill does, it requires this new data to be part of the school and district report cards. And if you remember back in 2013, we did a massive restructuring and redo of the school and district report cards, which they're about, for the district ones, they're many pages, includes tons of disaggregated data about high school graduation rates for subgroups, on track, dropout rates, et cetera. So there's all this data already available. And we're concerned that yet again, here we are talking about redoing another report at the school and district level. So ODE would have to retool, local school districts would have to retool and do different school and district report cards. And the third reason that we don't think this bill is necessary is there's another bill, Senate Bill 183, and it was referenced in the earlier testimony. That's from Colt Gill, the Chief Innovation Officer, whose job is to help school districts get a handle on improving our graduation rate. And that bill envisions a early learning system that's done at the student level that involves parents, families, school districts, community-based organizations, and others. And we think that's a better approach than just a state-level data collection. There's nothing in the bill about what to do with the data or how it's going to be used or what the purpose for. It seems, to be very honest, like just collecting data for data's sake. Certainly, school districts and charter schools know which students are credit deficient. They have all that information on their transcripts, is my understanding. So collecting that and aggregating that at the state level, again, especially when we already track ninth grade on track and do all the disaggregated dropout and graduation data, seems like a lot of data collection when there are better options and better opportunities that are being discussed by this body. So thank you for the time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Mr. Koba? Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Morgan, you said there's 100 and some odd new data points. Those are all new data points? Those are all information that's not currently collected without parsing through exactly what it looks like?
That would be my understanding. So in the section one of the bill, it talks, on lines, line six, it talks about that this information will be analyzed for any student population for which the department calculates a graduation rate. And on the school and district report cards, that's 14 subgroups. And then starting on line 8 through line 14, it talks about the four types of analysis that must be made, and then it describes that being year over year. So I took 14 subgroups times 4 metrics, and that's compared, I believe, the way it's written, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, and 11 to 12. And so that's how I got that calculation. And if I'm incorrect, I'd be happy to be corrected.
Follow up. But we are collecting currently some of this data.
So my understanding is that certainly school districts would have this information. It's not currently reported to the Department of Education and collected. So I imagine that each district has different information, but certainly I would presume, based on my limited understanding, that districts know which students are credit deficient because we already have a ninth grade on track reporting system. But they are not currently required to report this information that this bill envisions to the Department of Education.
Thank you, Representative Parrish.
Appreciate it. Question for you, though, as it relates to, you know, why to collect this data. I mean, the bill might not specify. When I look at it, I think it's an opportunity to understand that as kids are portable and they move, if a child is landing, whether it's a brick-and-mortar, traditional school, charter school, online school, and they're landing somewhere else that's credit deficient, and they're credit deficient when they get there, it seems like we are holding whatever school they land at as the school district that's responsible for that problem when we're not looking back to why a child actually is credit deficient. So, I mean, we experienced this personally. My son moved out of arguably one of the better middle schools in the state and was 2 grades behind in math. So is it the fault of the school that he landed in, or was it the fault of us as parents and the school that he came from, that he was 2 full years behind in math? So to me, I see this bill as an opportunity to do that look back piece, and maybe that's not in the bill, but to do that look back piece and make that connection of what's the district that's sending kids and the child is not, you know, is credit deficient when they leave. So is there a mechanism currently that you think is covered by that to do that look back piece? Because I'm not sure where that is in our current
system. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Parrish. I think it's a good question and a good discussion point. And I think I would go a little bit further and talk about, we certainly have, if you look at the data on student mobility, particularly amongst our immigrant students, or you go into East Multnomah County, where you know, socioeconomic struggles are, and we have lots of student mobility, students moving between districts that are tightly packed together, our homeless student population. Last week we heard the bill about the foster kids and other reasons. There's all kinds of reasons that students are credit deficient, and they run the gamut. And I absolutely agree with that. I think the question is, none of that is in context. This is just a pure analysis of how many kids are credit deficient, and it doesn't sort of take into account and try to answer those types of questions, which I think you put forward, which are very legitimate, and I think questions that a lot of people struggle with. One of my concerns is, I worry sometimes about people kind of finger-pointing a little bit. What our responsibility, whether you're a public school district or a charter school, is we take the kids when they come to us, and we have to deal with their situations, and it's our responsibility to get them to graduate on time, regardless of whatever the circumstances are that, that bring them to our door. So I do worry, frankly, a little bit about finger pointing and people saying, well, it's not really our fault, our graduation rate for our school district or our charter school is only 55%, because look, half the kids that enrolled in our school district or our charter school came to us credit deficient, or they've had mobility, or they're homeless, or these other things, and that's why they're not graduating, not because anything we did. They came to us damaged, and we can't get them to graduate, so it's not really our fault. I have a little bit of concern about that, to be very honest.
Can I follow up? So a couple things. I've heard over the years that I've been in this committee, that is the precise reason why we should limit choice, is because, you know, they're not accountable based on the current structure. So what would you do to make this bill better so that we can get good data out of it and be able to do that look back piece, and maybe not in a blame kind of way, but I also don't think we should keep looking forward at folks where kids land and say, well, they're to blame too, so therefore we should shut down an entire charter school or some other choice. How do you reconcile that? How would we reconcile this bill to be able to do that in a more constructive way, to hold folks harmless, but also use the data in a way to help, you know, get progress for a child?
Representative Doherty and Representative Parrish, I don't know if I have a good answer to that kind of off the cuff. It's something we could certainly talk about. Again, I talked to the proponents and said, if this is something that the charter school folks want, do not want to get in the way of that, and happy to make an amendment to have it apply to charter schools or make it work for charter schools. The challenge for us is it applies to school districts. And again, when we're looking at sort of mandate relief and paperwork reduction in the context of all the other things, I'm not sure what the answer is. I certainly think that Senate Bill 183, the bill I referenced earlier, in my opinion, is a better approach, which is a student-level focused approach where you involve the parents and the family and the school district, community-based organizations, culturally specific groups, other people, to try to build a plan around the individual student rather than sort of some macro analysis of the data. But that's my personal opinion.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Those are the only ones we had signed up for this bill. Is there anybody else? Okay, if not seen that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2898, and we're not moving it today. We're still waiting for the fiscal on it. So with that, I will continue to close the work session, or the public hearing. Okay, and what we're going to do is we're now going to open a work session on House Bill 3029. Alethea?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3029 changes the allowance from 5 years of age to require students who have been enrolled in public school be 5 or 6 years of age, and it changes the compulsory school age from 6 to 7 years of age. There is a -2 and -3 amendment. The -3 amendment is most recent. It replaces the contents of the measure. It allows children to not be required to attend public full-time school for 1 year if the parent or legal guardian notifies the school district that they will delay such enrollment to meet the child's needs for cognitive, social, or physical development. It allows the determination be made by the parent or legal guardian, and it goes into effect July 1st, 2017. A fiscal statement has been issued as minimal fiscal impact. A revenue statement has been issued with a revenue impact. And the last hearing was March 27th.
Okay, and Representative Hayden's here. We have some other questions. There's been some amendments since the last time we heard this bill. So, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, and the rest of the committee. Here to answer any questions that you have. I have worked with the Oregon Department of Education and some school districts specifically on this bill. There's been a couple of amendments. The amendment before you is kind of a combination between the school districts and what the Oregon Department of Education recommended, with the comment that I want people to be aware that the -2 amendment didn't require the written notice, and it didn't limit it to a year. The -3 amendment does limit it to a year, and it requires written notice, and it also states that for cognitive, social, and physical development, basically narrowing the scope of this to children with developmentally delayed conditions. The school district did offered an opportunity to have an amendment that took out the cognitive, social, and physical developments. The school districts themselves kind of like that language because they feel like it narrows it more. So I left it in the dash three. They did, if the school if the Department of Education wanted to broaden it again, I would be happy with that on the Senate side, but the intent was for developmentally delayed children. So there was some conversations about this, and I spoke last time about 80 children. When parents had the choice, whether it was five, six, or seven, when that choice was available, 84 students or 84 families took the advantage of waiting from 6 till 7. And I wanted to make it clear that of those 84 families, that was not 84 developmentally delayed families. That was the total N number, or the total number across the whole state that chose to do that. Of those students, I asked for the Department of Education of how many of those 80 students in 2016, when they were required to enter, went into an IEP. I wasn't provided with that information, but my assertion is that the number of students that did enter a talented and gifted program early was 19, that we could get statistics on it, and the children that would be requesting to enter the school system at a later date would probably be somewhere around 10 to 19 students. So we're talking about a very small amount of students. In the realm of special needs parents, when a child gets around 4, there's always the discussion of, is your child born in August or is your child born in October? And for the parents of the special needs child that's born in October, there is a sigh of relief. I've got one more year. I've got 12 more months. I've got 6 more months to get little Johnny potty trained, to enter a full day of school. And for the parents that have their child born in July or August, it's like, we're not ready. We're not ready. So my whole point with this, if you have a child born 30 days later from another child, it's a total different dynamic for that family of, we've got to deal with the school, we've got to deal with the teachers, we've got to deal with potty training, we've got to deal with all of that just because our child is born 10 or 15 or 20 days later. If the child was gifted and talented, they would have an avenue to say, I want my child to be in a peer group that meets with them because they are so far beyond their other peers that would be 1 year older. They have an avenue to do that. All we're asking in this bill, Department of Education has got to neutral. The school districts have told me they've got to neutral on it, although they're not champions of it. They are neutral on it. All we're asking is for the same parity for parents with special needs kids or developmentally delayed children within the nuances of what's legal. And that's really where the conversation is now, not whether we should do this narrow scope or what's legal so that's not discriminatory. We want the same parity for those parents to say, hey, my son or daughter was born in October. We want that, or was born in July or August. We want that breathing room that a kid born in October would have. That's all we're asking for. It's very simple. It might affect 10 kids, maybe 20. There's been questions raised about, well, these programs quit at age 5. Under our current law, the programs quit at age 5. Under our current law, even with the 5 to 6, the state law has the same effect on these kids within their programs at 6 years old because those programs quit at 5. And so it's really not a strong argument in my view to say, well, they might be disconnected from these services, because under the current law with age of 6, that would happen. And many of these parents have the opportunities to go out and provide these services in addition to what that's available. So it's a very narrow group of children. It allows the parents just a little bit more time for their kids to fit in with their peer groups. That's all we're asking for.
So basically, we are not changing the age from 6 to 7. We are giving leeway for certain 7-year-olds to go in to start school later.
We are not changing the compulsory school age with this. It is amended. That's what the relating to clause is. But is it amended to a very narrow focus of children that would benefit from delaying that entry from being required to go to that full-time school, give them time to get potty trained, give them time to learn how to dress themselves, wash their hands, eat lunch. And many children, that 12 months makes a big difference.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Representative Hayden?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
So the dash three.
And the dash three. So, Richard Donovan?
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Richard Donovan on behalf of OSBA. Again, thank you for letting me speak very quickly on the Dash 3s. I testified when this bill was originally heard in opposition to the measure. Representative Hayden has been a great champion for this. He's got an amendment that takes care of our concerns, and it feels a little late to be piling on, and he said we're not champions, so I won't say that we're champions, but we're very happy with where the Dash 3s are. He's also acknowledged that if we continue to have concerns, he'd be happy to deal with them on the Senate side. The Dash 3s represent a surgical fix for a group of kids that really needs this attention, and we're very happy with them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Yeah. Representative Fernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment.
Okay, Representative Fernandez moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3029 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3029 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Yep, aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the bill, the
motion passes.
The motion passes, and we will ask Representative Hayden to carry this on the floor. Okay, thank you. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 3029 and open up a work session on House Bill 2658.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2658 requires the Oregon Department of Education to establish a pilot program to distribute money towards school districts to hire school social workers and increase the working hours of existing school social workers and enable existing personnel to earn their school social workers license. It requires school districts participating in the pilot program to submit annually information relating to student attendance rates, reported incidents of harassment, intimidation, bullying, or cyberbullying, morale of students and teachers, and any other element of the school system. It requires the Department of Education report annually to the Legislative Assembly on October 15th of each year, summarizing the above information. It includes school social workers in the list of qualifying professions for school districts and education service districts to receive monies for providing behavioral health services and decreasing rates of absenteeism. It appropriates $20 million out of the general fund for the pilot program and goes into effect July 1st, 2017. There is a dash one, a dash two, and a dash three amendment. Since we will be moving the dash three amendment, I'll summarize that. The dash three amendment removes the inclusion of school social workers in the list of qualifying professions for schools, for school districts and education service districts to receive monies for providing behavioral health services and decreasing rates of absenteeism. It removes the $20 million allocation of the general fund resources and appropriates a blank amount. It appropriates money from the High School Graduation, College, and Career Readiness Fund from Ballot Measure 98 monies for the pilot program, and it requires the Department of Education submit annual reports but allows first submission by October 15, 2018. It also removes the requirement that each school district report to the Department of Education the morale of students and teachers. There is a revenue statement which has been issued as no impact. A fiscal impact statement has been issued. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and the last hearing was March 13th.
Okay. And this is where I have a little testimony that I will be giving from the dais. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty, State Representative for House District 35, which is Tigard and Southwest Portland. And I wanted to take a quick moment to provide an explanation of the Dash 3 amendments before you today in House Bill 2685. As you can see, per feedback and conversation that we had when Representative Peluso and I presented this bill a few weeks ago, that we had conversation within the committee, and we did remove the language relating to the morale of students and teachers as per Representative Springer's question. Additionally, we have adapted the reporting for the ODE to reflect when ODE would actually have the information necessary to provide a report on the impacts of the legislation. And then finally, we've removed the dollar amount and replaced it with a blank space for ways and means to determine based on funds available in the high school graduation and college and career readiness fund, which is 98. With these fixes, I think we're well positioned to help get school social workers into our schools to provide vital services that will help keep kids in school, empower them to learn while they're in the classroom. And I urge support of House Bill 2685, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
The 98 allocation, mm-hmm. Why was that important?
Well, first of all, what this is, Vice Chair Wilson, Vice Chair Hernandez, and Representative Vial, what it is that part of the high school graduation and college career readiness fund, which is two of the prongs of 98,
right.
This falls right into what those are. And so what it was it is so imperative, if you've spent any time in school or any time with the kids, it is so imperative that we get help to these kids in school, whether it be 8th grade, 12th grade, 5th grade, 4th grade, whatever. And the resources and the funds have not been there for decades. And so what we now is we have the opportunity to have funds which, you know, wanted to go, which the people passed to go through and have more career readiness, to have better graduation rates, to have less absenteeism. That was the purpose of the fund. And so by going through and having the high school graduation and college and career readiness funds be able to use that, hopefully we can get this through Ways and Means, get a fiscal, get people hired in a pilot program, so we can finally get help to these kids after 20 years. That's the whole thing about it.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I sincerely appreciate the passion behind wanting to address the kinds of needs that social workers would address with our students. I'm really dubious about whether the voters thought that it was going to be this kind of program that those Measure 98 funds would go for. What I hear is, if it's not welding, construction, et cetera, it's not Measure 98. And I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be better for us to, we wouldn't have perhaps even a better chance of addressing this social worker issue if we didn't mix those two up in terms
well,
of...
Well, and I think to answer your question, part of it is there are basically three prongs in Measure 98, and through the task force you'll be hearing about, you'll get the report on Wednesday, is that there was career readiness, and we've always kind of talked about three silos. There was career readiness, there was absenteeism, and there was raising the graduation rate. And so the three are separate. They all have the same goal of getting more kids through school and getting more, you know, that kind of thing. And one of the ways you can get at least high school kids through school is maybe offering more technical classes, which is absolutely 100% necessary. But then it's also going through and talking about what we need to do at grade 2 and at grade 4 and at grade 6. And so that's what the prongs we're talking about. And, you know, if you read the measure, which, you know, not a lot of people read the measure when they're voting on it, I think it's really important to go through and do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, any other questions? Representative quickly, Representative Solomon, you've got to vote on this and get
okay.
people
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have some questions because now that you touched on, I too also shared some concerns about, while I completely believe in the testimony and going forward, the reasoning when we had the social worker here and what her skill level was and how she was working with students, I completely agree in the work that we are doing. I was kind of concerned about the, because I don't think it's the first one we've heard about with using Measure 98 funds. So I just had some questions on that. And you're saying now that the pilot program is older than high school? Yeah, I mean, younger than high school age, so these social workers would be in.
Well, see, what this is that probably yes, and the reason is when you're looking at this, if a child never gets to 9th grade or 10th grade or 11th grade, the CTE is not going to help them. And so our goal is to get them there to go through and do it. So, you know, not being the expert on the measure, but some of the things that we've talked about in committees and so on is yes. Yes. Career technical is different than the other two prongs that they referred to in the ballot measure. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to have some real concerns with being able to vote in favor of this because it's below high school age. Because it's you're looking at, and I think that the work group that we've heard from, where we've heard some folks talking about doing some work like in the middle school age, and now we're talking about using funds.
Are you saying that your interpretation is that not a dime was going to be used for a child under grade 9 for anything?
For Measure 98 funds, it was my impression that this was going to be used for high school age.
For CTE.
For Measure 98.
Which is CTE, one part of it.
Three parts.
One part of it.
But it was my understanding that this.
We will get that for you because what it is there are some things that are different. So we will go through and get that information for you. Okay, any other questions? Quickly.
Chair Doherty, just to clarify, the ballot language says require state funding for dropout prevention, career and college readiness programs in Oregon high schools. That was the language of the ballot.
Okay.
And then
Thank
it
you.
Clarified under yes and no. And
okay. Any other questions? Okay, with that, we close the work session on House Bill, we're not going to do this.
You don't want to make it.
On House Bill 2658. Okay, next.
Okay.
What do we have now? It's going to get worse throughout here because we've got so many bills that we're dealing with every day. We done 2845?
No, we have not. Do you want to? Well, we don't have a fiscal on that.
Okay.
We're gonna
be holding over House Bill 2845 because we don't have a fiscal on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've done 3028.
Do you want to do McLean's bill? Is that what she
Yes.
Did?
Representative McLean's bill.
I'm not sure.
Which is.
I don't think so. Okay. Let's do 2720. Do you want to do your bill? Because she has to leave.
Yeah. 2720.
Yeah.
Okay. What we're going to do is open a. What are we opening? We are opening up a work session on House Bill 2720.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2720 requires the Oregon Department of Education to conduct a study on virtual public charter schools. It requires the study examine the state and federal resources available to virtual public charter schools and resources available to virtual public charter schools, differences in resources available to such schools, financial and working relationship between each virtual public charter school, the types and regularity of the reviews of those schools, the school sponsors, and the types and reviews of the demographics. It requires the Oregon Department of Education to examine the demographics of the students in each school, the average number of credits the students are deficient upon entrance. It requires the Department of Education to submit a report in determining what types of data should be collected regularly from virtual public charter schools and how to collect the data. It repeals the study on January 2, 2018 and requires the report be submitted and presented to the Interim Committee on Education no later than December 15, 2017 and appropriates $100,000 from the general fund to conduct the study. It goes into effect upon passage. There is a dash 2 and dash 3 amendment, since there's an interest from the sponsor on working the dash 2. I'll summarize that one. The dash 2 changes the study of requirements of the success rate of students in each virtual public charter school to study the growth of students to now include graduation rates, test scores, or ranking systems of the students. It requires the Oregon Department of Education to submit the report to the Interim Committee no later than December 15, 2017, and a secondary report on September 18, 2018, and repeals the task force on January 2, 2019. There is a revenue impact statement with no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued as a hall pass. The last meeting was March 6, 2017. There is a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Representative McLean, did you want to go through and talk to your amendments at all?
The amendment just basically cleared up, it went back to original language, and it cleared up that it was an addition to, I just talked to the folks that were here from the virtual charter schools, and it basically says that we're not focusing on high school graduation rates, and we're not focusing on the testing, which is already basically collected by the department, but that we are trying to focus on the list that the virtual schools and I came up with, which really talks to growth, talks to deficit classes, talks to the kinds of students and what the different schools are doing as far as programs, curriculum, etc.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Springer.
Just very briefly, point of clarification, if I may.
Yeah.
So this amendment returns your bill to the original language you had that you and I had discussed.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other discussion? Is there any objection?
Yes.
Okay, if not, the Dash 2 amendment is adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2720 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The bill will be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2720 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
No.
Chair Doherty.
Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent to, as amended, to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, and also with that, I also close the work session on House Bill 2720 and open up a work session on House Bill 3216.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3216 requires the Chief Education Office conduct a study on identifying practices that assist public school students in poverty families. It requires the Chief Education Office use the study to evaluate locally effective practice that improve the achievement outcomes, identify modifications to improve practices evaluated, and identify sustainable funding sources. It allows the office to collaborate with stakeholders that include educators, school board members, and school budget committee members. It requires the study to consider a variety of school districts, including district size, location, other demographics. It requires there be a report submitted to the Legislative Assembly during the interim no later than September 15, 2018. Declares emergency and effective July 1, 2017. There is a revenue statement which has been issued as no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement with minimal fiscal.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3216 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3216 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Vile?
Madam Chair, I'm going to be a yes vote on this, but I want for the record to once again state that I'm really concerned about the number of these that supposedly have minimal fiscal impact. I'm dubious about it, and I'm going to be anxious to make sure that we're not piling on just hordes of additional financial responsibility for these departments that we're not going to have the money for. So I just want to make sure that that's clear.
Yes, and that is something they're already doing, so that's why.
That's why it's minimal.
Yeah, that's why it's minimal. There's a certain process that, in fact, you may want to just as a new person, because we've done, I did this myself, is to talk to the Legislative Revenue Office when they can find a moment and find out like what the process is they go through with this, because it really is helpful. You know, to, I mean, minimal. So what's minimal? And so they go through and they've got that information. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Excused.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Solman?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Aye.
Representative Vile?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And Representative Wisnett, would you like to carry? He was here a minute ago. Representative Wisnett, would you like to carry the bill? Thank you very much. So we'll have Representative Wisnett on the bill. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 3216. And
open up the work session on 2688.
On 2688. Mm-hmm. And we open up the work session on House Bill 2688.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2688 establishes the Oregon Quality Education Model Modernization Task Force for the purpose of evaluating current standards for staffing, technology, and transportation, and evaluating the workforce requirements and opportunities for private sector investments. It establishes the task force to evaluate workforce requirements and opportunities for private sector investments in school districts and education service district regions. It requires the task force to develop a baseline budget model for public schools and for each school district to implement the recommendations set by the Quality Education Commission at 80, 90, 100, 103% of the recommended budget. For this version of the bill, there may have a revenue impact, but there's no statement issued. For the fiscal, there may have one, but no statement issued. There is a dash one amendment which replaces the contents of the measure. The dash one amendment establishes the Oregon Quality Education Model Modernization Task Force for the purpose of evaluating the comprehensiveness of the determination made by the Quality Education Commission. It requires the task force consists of 9 members and establishes the composition. It utilizes the task force to evaluate the comprehensiveness of the quality education model to ensure the model considers student needs in relation to staffing, transportation, technology access, and other supports. It delineates the task force to evaluate a biennial process for updating the QEM to evaluate best practices on staffing optimization, ensure sufficient technology, student transportation needs, and ensure adequate resources for students in summer months, including credit recovery, workforce preparation, and recommended changes to the model itself. A revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue impact. A fiscal impact statement has been issued on this bill. The last hearings were February 22nd, March, and March 8th. There is a subsequent referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Yes, you may.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Just a real quick comment. As late, or I should say as early as today even, Tim Nesbitt, in an editorial beating up on another House bill, emphasized that, surprise, surprise, he admitted that we have never successfully linked the expectations of 40-40-20, the expectations of higher graduation rates, to funding, which I know is kind of odd to say, but nonetheless, he wrote. And the whole point of this particular task force is to, in fact, do that, to link them so that we actually have an idea of what we need to be able to put forward in terms of resources so that in the 21st century we actually have aligned outcomes, especially with the changing nature of today's workforce. So I appreciate consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Oh,
we don't have. We're going to have an amendment or a motion, and then we'll have discussion.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt Dash One Amendment.
Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the Dash One Amendments. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments really are for both the Dash One, and I'm sure it's going to be moved to the bill. I've been on this, I think I'm the only one here, actually, that has been on the Appropriations Committee, this committee, that meets twice every biennium. And I've been frustrated since the first day I showed up because we have this academic conversation. And so I'm not going to be supporting this, not because I think this is a bad idea. I think this is a fine idea, but we're spending money on a task force. And Representative Comp and myself, 5 years ago probably, did similar work. We just didn't put it in a bill. We've got to take a new look at the model. Well, we did that, and we've not changed a thing. Mm-hmm. And I just can't go with spending money on a task force that's going to produce some nice work mm-hmm. that we're going to look at and say, that's nice work,
yes,
and move on.
And I appreciate your comment. I have a feeling Representative Evans will not allow that to go on, but I appreciate the comment, and it is one that is very germane. So any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Is there any objection?
Yes.
Okay, so Matt, could you read the roll, please? With this, when there are objections, we usually go through and have the roll to have people object or not.
Representative Evans.
I approve of the Dash One Amendment.
Representative McLean.
Excused.
Representative Parrish.
No.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Representative Vile.
No.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
No.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay.
So it does move.
Okay. Yes, we're going to stand at ease for a moment. Okay. No longer at ease. And so we were, just to recap people, we were talking about the Dash One Amendments, and we were asking for the adoption of the Dash One Amendments. And now that Representative McLean was here, there were some objections, so we had a roll call vote for it. So, Representative McLean, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Okay, she votes aye. Okay, with that, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2688 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves HB 2688 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
No, it doesn't.
Parrish.
No.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Doesn't say
no.
Representative Vile.
No.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1 second.
The motion was wrong.
Wait, 1 second. I think there's actually a difference.
Wait,
script.
Susan?
This is a...
Susan?
What a circus.
The motion was wrong. It should say referral to Ways and Means.
Oh, okay. Oh, these Roberts rules drive me nuts. Here, write that in so we can.
Of course. Yeah. We'll
try it again.
Roberts rules.
Four steps.
Oh, no.
Four steps in the last hour.
Okay, let's do this quick.
Okay.
Don't do it quick. Do
so,
it right.
What can we do a mulligan? Can we do a mulligan in Roberts rules?
No.
Okay.
It's a script issue.
Okay,
sorry.
We'll just write down with
the rule of honor for a reason.
It's a script thing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Can I do that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Wait, and then...
Yeah. So we adopt the dash ones. we're at ease again.
It's me. Yeah.
Okay, just as a matter of clarification, we started voting on the bill, and we just need to make the clarification that this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So, we were in the middle of voting, Matt.
Vice Chair Hernandez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson?
No.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Was that the vote?
It's 5-4.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and it's not going to Ways and Means, so we don't need a carrier. Okay, we are carrying over a few bills.
It is going to Ways and Means, yes.
So no carrier. Okay, we are carrying over.
Do you want to carry over okay.
Yeah. You carry over this meeting here. Okay, we are going to be carrying over House Bill 3413. 2898. And 2658.
And 2845.
And 2845. Those will be carrying over. Okay, that's it. Those will be carrying over. Okay, that's it.